welcome to Random Gaming Talk. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for video games. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is Robert. How's it going?
It's going good. How's it going for you?
It's an interesting question. That continues to be an interesting question. But I am okay. I'm hanging in there. Some good stuff has happened this week. Some confusing things have happened this week, which we will talk about as well. But yes, it was an eventful week last week, and more so than I intended. But we will talk about some of those things as we get to them. Cool. Yeah, so just to explain kind of where we've been for almost 2 weeks, I decided I wanted to try to do the show this weekend rather than the Monday or the Tuesday, just to kind of get in early on that slot, if that makes sense. So we technically missed two episodes. Yeah, it was actually 2 weeks, yeah. So the first of those weeks, I think that was on the Monday we had booked, and I just wasn't well enough to sort of do it. And then I'm not sure where in the podcast I should explain this. I will talk about it in housekeeping as well. Last week on Friday, when I posted my Yellow Jackets review, that was Season 3, Episode 6, so last week's one, and the Ted Lasso podcast, and something really weird happened with a lot of the podcasts. I don't know how many of them it happened to, because I can't look through 2,000. I don't even know how many we've got. It's over 2,000 podcasts. But some of the episodes decided to switch themselves around. Now, I am actively emailing back and forth with Castos, who are the hosting provider, about that. And it got to Monday / Tuesday, whatever. I think we were going to do the show on Tuesday, maybe, or something. And not only was I kind of not really in the mood to do it, and I was sorting out whatever the hell was going on with this thing. So we kind of missed it for that reason. I figured a temporary way around it for making new podcasts. So this one should be fine. I've already put out three since the incident happened, which is two test podcasts and my actual review of this week's Yellow Jackets, and those seem fine at the moment, so that's good. But yeah, what was it that I messaged you about with it? I can't remember what it was that I actually said. So I think I just said there was an issue.
You just said you weren't feeling well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you weren't feeling well, and then there was an issue with the podcast.
Yeah, so all of that stuff happened. I'll get a little bit more specific with it in housekeeping, but that was what happened this week. So basically, if you've gone to play one of Entertainment Talk's podcasts since last Friday, and you noticed the time of the episode changed and played a different podcast, that is the thing that is happening. So yeah, you didn't download like the wrong one or anything like that. It's just doing this thing for a weird reason. So that's your little update there, but I'll go through a few other bits and pieces with it in housekeeping. The last Gaming Talk we did, which was like the Wonder Woman episode, when they cancelled that and all that kind of stuff, that episode is perfectly fine. Some of the episodes are absolutely perfectly fine, both on podcast platforms and on the actual post version. So yeah, we'll pin that for a minute and let's talk about some games we're playing. So Robert, what are you playing at the moment?
Mostly I have been playing Kingdom Come Deliverance. I've been plowing through all the DLC, which I never got a chance to do the first time. In addition to that, I needed a tactical shooter fix, so I purchased XCOM Enemy Unknown on Steam when it was on sale for $4. Mm-hmm. And I've been playing a little bit of that. Outside of that, I haven't really had a whole lot of time.
Okay. Speaking of Kingdom Come 2... so the newer game.
Nope, just the first one.
No, that's what I'm going to speak about in a minute. yeah, so speaking of obviously that franchise, and there's the newer one with two. I watched Access play some of it. Robert, they set Robert this challenge. Not you, Robert. PlayStation Access is Robert. It's called Pearson. Set him, because sometimes they have like, hey, let's stream the new game, obviously to kind of show it off, because they get early access and all that sort of thing. That's kind of the whole point. And rather than just, hey, let's just dawdle around in this game and play for 90 minutes, they had this like money goal, like Robert's got to have a certain amount of I can't even remember what the amount was, a certain amount of money by the end of the stream, and tested out the combat stuff. The combat looks really good. Looks really good. I can't remember how it looked in. I know there was the whole specific aiming direction thing that you do, which looked quite cool. So I'm intrigued to step into that. Even
Yeah,
if it
it's
is
a
just
good
kind of for
combat
the combat.
system. Yeah, it is a very good combat system in terms of keeping the game grounded in reality, but it makes no bones about the fact that when you start, you are a schlub. You have very little stamina, it takes forever to regen, and you can't do the Skyrim thing of just flailing about a sword for half an hour and then eventually something falls over. No, you got to be super critical and super precise with your aiming and your strikes. And I suck at it. Eventually, if I know I'm going up against more than one person, I'll literally just backtrack and hit him in the face with arrows until they drop. And I'm not even joking about that.
Everybody's got their own tactic. You found yours, so there you go. But no, it does look kind of intriguing, so I might jump on that at some point soon. Yeah, he ended up going on like a killing spree at the end, and it was pretty funny. So there we go. I wanted to make a small little change to. I don't know how week to week this is gonna kind of go, because you never know how much news we're gonna get, or news is gonna drop on the day of the show, or the day before, or something really big. We're not in control of that, obviously. When I mean, we can be alerted to like, hey, there's a thing happening on this day, and we're recording on this day, so that's gonna line up this way. We can kind of control that, but we can't control when companies are going to announce things or talk about things. What I'm going to do this week particularly is so rather there's a couple of like things I want to talk about. That was kind of one of them, and also to do with Atom Fall as well. What I'm going to kind of do with this is put still the news stories in the news section, but then when I go to sort of like talk about what I'm going to refer to it now, at least for my section. You don't have obviously have to do the same thing for yours. Is like talk about things I've been playing and things I've maybe seen and my impressions of like, hey, I saw this gameplay, it looked like this, maybe. Although if that's part of a showcase, then that would be in the news thing. We'll see how that kind of ebbs and flows a bit. But one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about that I'd seen in this kind of what we've been up to for games, I guess, because it's not really a news thing, is they also streamed Atom Fall as well. Access streamed that the other day. So this is the like kind of Fallout-ish sort of game, but it's set in London. And if you recall, when we first saw this trailer, which I think was at an Xbox showcase, but this game is on PlayStation, it was at one of their showcase things and whatever. And as somebody who lives in the UK and has seen obviously a good chunk of it, not all of it, but I've seen obviously a good chunk of the UK. I'm of the opinion that the UK is a very ugly looking country. And I'm talking specifically like buildings, paths. It's just, first of all, it's not very clean. London itself is not very clean, and the UK. And I remember when I was walking around with a friend in Brighton a few years ago. And Brighton's got like, if the weather's nice, it's got a nice seafront, that kind of stuff. Obviously, you've got to be careful of birds and whatnot and all that sort of thing. And I was walking around with this friend. And I was like, because this friend was from America, they'd come down for various different reasons, and I said like, hey, do you notice all the buildings around us are kind of grey and black and white, and like there was a few bits of red buildings and blue buildings. And I remember when we first saw the announcement trailer for Atom Fall, and apart from the like, if you remember the sort of the big bright red phone box, which is obviously in there for plot reasons and stuff. It looks the same. You've got like grey rocks, grey building. I just, me personally, I just don't think the UK looks like a very interesting country. And for people who are like, hey, we're tourists, we're going to come over here to the UK. And I'm like, okay, well, what are you going to look at? Okay, you might want to visit Buckingham Palace. I don't personally think that's worth it. And there's things like the London Eye. But when I look at something like Las Vegas, and I'm like, wow, there's a city with like colors and lights and more things to do. And granted, a good chunk of it is gambling and whatnot. Not that you have to do that, but it's a thing there. And I'm like, that's where a tourist should go. That's where someone like a tourist from a different country should go to, because we have nothing compared to something like Las Vegas. And again, I've still not explored like all of London, but I've seen a big enough chunk of it to know it looks like what I think it is, which is the same kind of thing. But yeah, as somebody who was born and raised and still lives here, I think this country is particularly ugly, at least compared to other countries. And I see places like, Ibiza and other places in Spain and like places in Italy and stuff. All of these like nice touristy sort of locations from other countries all look better than anything that we've got over here. So if you are a tourist and you're listening to this, well, you can be obviously into gaming and into tourism. I don't know how the two of those things meld. But if you are into games and you are listening to this and you're a tourist, please tell me why you'd come over here. I'm just curious about that. Any thoughts on obviously you're from the US, which again has got better looking places than what we've got. Any thoughts on that stuff?
Well, I think with any capital city in a country, just it being the capital itself is a reason for somebody that's not from there to visit there. It's like, you people from the UK that come over to the US, they think big capital cities like New York, LA, Las Vegas, Austin, places like that. But let me tell you something. A lot of those places you do not want to go. San Francisco has such a bad homeless problem with people shitting in the streets. The city actually created an app called SnapCrap to track
My
it so
God.
that you could go on the map and see which areas of the city are buried under human waste. And they had to create a special sanitation department just to clean up human waste. They literally found 10 pounds of crap in a bag on the sidewalk. I am not making that up. You can look that up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Vegas ain't much better because they made weed recreational, and the first week after they made weed recreational, they ran out of weed. And so you get a contact high like you're at a what's that dude's name? Willie Nelson concert, just walking around the streets of Las Vegas. Oh, and they tax the ever loving hell out of you. You think London taxes are bad? You can visit a casino and they will charge you $40 for parking. You could stay in a casino and they will charge you $50 a day for quote unquote entertainment fee. So when you if you're online and you're looking at hotel prices, whatever they quote you, put a couple of zeros on that, because that'll be what you wind up paying with taxes.
Yeah. No, I simply just mean places that visually look nice. Like we're one of the more boring countries for that, I think. So.
Well, I think it's not so much that you're boring, it's just that you've been a mega city for so long. A lot of the beauty is either in the really, really, really old stuff, which sadly doesn't appeal to people your generation and younger anymore, or the parks, which you can't get to because they're all owned by the nobility.
So yeah, anyway, that's where Atom Falls set. Obviously, that game is, a bit different because it's set in its own plot and whatnot and all that sort of thing. Still looks like the UK though. So yeah, I mean, if that's what they were, that's obviously what they were going for, and they did that well. So on the game itself, I do think this game looks very good. Now, I've not actually seen a ton of talk about whether people think it does or doesn't look good. Dave was playing the game, and Nathan was the one who was like, keeping an eye on the chat and talking back and forth with David and that. Now, I'm a big picky player when it comes to gunplay. You Call of Duty, your Titanfalls, whatever, any sorts of games. It doesn't have to be a certain genre of first person shooter either. It can just be first person shooters. Looked very stiff from a first person shooter standpoint. And I've seen other similar games look better with their gunplay and stuff. So I thought that just looked, I mean, it looked easy to play. Like Dave was hitting a lot of his shots and they didn't look very difficult. So I don't know if that's like to do with the flow of the game, but it looked kind of stiff at points. I've not actually seen the whole stream that they did. It was like an hour and a half or something, like they usually do. I've watched up to about an hour of it, and at first I was like, oh, okay, so it's Fallout in Britain. That's kind of an interesting, again, I'm not personally interested in games from Britain necessarily, unless you do like a Watch Dogs thing. I think that was maybe one of the best games, or was it Watch Dogs Legion? They did it in the third game where you could control like different people. That was quite a good that see, the reason that was an interesting version of that was a sort of what was it they labeled that as? That was like, hey, 20 years post Brexit or something, where the government has got like drones and that sort of stuff. So that was an interesting way to sort of have London in a game, but then have it be, you know, very a different like sort of setting to what we have, whereas Anthem falls more kind of in line with what it looks like now. So yeah, just
What it
wanted.
looks like now, yeah, but it's based off of an actual incident with a nuclear reactor back in the day, and so it's an alt history kind of a game.
Have you seen any of this game at all? It's kind of like sneakily come out, I think.
It
This.
doesn't come out for a little bit, I think next week. I have seen some early previews, and the only thing I get consistently is that the AI needs a day one patch.
Yeah,
It's
there
not
was a
like
few.
Assassin's Creed terrible, but it's not great.
Oh, Assassin's Creed. We could do a whole podcast on that, even with neither of us playing the game. Anyway, just wanted to share some thoughts on Atom Fall. I'm going to try and do this a little bit more, where it's like, hey, I've seen bits of this game, bits of that game. Here's my thoughts on some stuff, assuming I'm interested in talking about said game itself. But it was one where, like, they showed the initial reveal trailer. I didn't hear anything for a while, and then it's like coming out kind of silently. Right. Need to get to it. I've put in capital letters, talk about Astrobot. Of course, we had back in, what was it, September, Astrobot released. It had its main five, I think five or six worlds. Went through all them, absolutely brilliant. Obviously, did my full review, which should still be the same review if you go and check it out. I don't know how far back this particular era has gone, but that should still be there and still be all right. And then where do I want to kind of start with, like, how much good stuff is going on with this game? So they put out, I think it was three different sets of time trial levels. No, it was two of them. Two different sets of time trial levels, and they also put out obviously the Christmas level as well, which had, I'm not going to spoil any bots here, but had 10 bots in it. It was this massive, incredibly creative, really sort of like wide level for them to do, which was really, really amazing. And then they put out five time trials, and then they put out another five time trials, and it's just because it that the last one was, I think, this Thursday that just went, or the last one at least for this series. We don't know if they're going to do any more or whatever. They didn't sort of say this was the last one. And I just wanted to give credit where credit's due. And okay, I gave credit when I first played the game and when I finished it and all that kind of stuff, but obviously a lot's happened since then. But it's interesting in an era where, like, you've got games like Atom Fall and Assassin's Creed that, let's just say, they're not really pulling their weight, those sorts of games, at least in my opinion anyway. And, you know, we've, I mean, how many times on this show in the last, what year have we talked about, hey, this game's come out and not been in a good condition, this game's come out not been in a good condition. And for people that do like some of those, let's say, more mediocre games, the narrative you often end up hearing is like, oh, just try and have fun with it. Just try and, like, you know, excuse some of the issues. But then when you then come across what Team Asobi's done here with Astrobot, and even when I came away from my first review, I was like, okay, there is one glitch in this game that I found. And the glitch was that when you go to the crash site, which is where all the bots that you've collected are doing all their dances and, you know, all those sorts of things, and you press triangle is where Astro sort of, he does a whistle and they all come over to him. You can do this in different parts of the crash site to access different parts of it to sort of progress that. So that's the whole purpose of that. But there was a glitch. It was only like a really small thing, like compared to some of the rubbish you see these days in certain games. If you stand near the controller or the sort of jet thing that you navigate the levels with, which is a DualSense controller, and you press triangle again, you sort of dismiss them. They all go back to their spots because they all have obviously assigned spots and assigned animations and stuff, which is where they showcase themselves. And there'll be the occasional, it wouldn't even happen every time, where, like, you know, the front of the PlayStation where you've got the two, well, obviously with the disc tray and all that sort of bit is. Because the bots would have to walk around it to get to the back for where certain spots are, where they're standing. Every now and then, one of the bots would get stuck and it would be jumping in a pattern where it can't get past. Now, ever since the patch for at least the newest one, I don't know when they fixed it. And I tested it like 5, 6 times just out of curiosity to see with the newest thing. Because obviously, they're patching the game for adding the new bot in and adding the new level in each week. But obviously, they could be doing patches for actual stuff in the game. That doesn't seem to happen anymore. So you could declare Astrobot as a technically flawless game, because across even all the challenge levels where I've revisited certain levels or obviously played the main game, I didn't come across any other single issues in this game. And you know, a lot of people kind of hooed and hawed when it won Game of the Year, and people said, you know, oh, Black Myth should win because it's more of a proper game, it's not a kid's game, and all this sort of thing. And like, okay, Astrobot's not a kid's game, it's just family friendly. It's supposed to be for everybody, not just kids. And there's some difficult levels in that game where, you know, certain people are going to kind of struggle and stuff, so it's not really a kid's game per se. But yeah, as I said around the Geektown Awards and stuff all the way back in December when they added the Christmas level and I think some other bits. Even if you just take the main game, like even if you take the Christmas level away and you take the time trial levels away and all that sort of stuff, which they didn't have to do. They didn't have to do that at all. Even with that, you could probably have put in 40% into the main game and it still would have been, it might not have been, you know, the incredible thing that it was. It still would have been a very, very, very good game. So it just is kind of amazing to look at something like Astrobot and then see what something like Assassin's Creed is doing, and to a lesser extent, what Atomfall's doing of just not being great. And it's like sometimes you just got to call things out and give credit where credit is due. And I don't think Team Asobi's received enough credit for Astrobot, and even with the VR rescue mission game and with Astro's Playroom. It's incredible what they've done with these three games so far. And yeah, just wanted to kind of mention that, and along with the levels as well and the bots that they've had selected and stuff, I think it's been really, really good. I've not known all the bots, or they've not all been, you know, from games I love and that sort of stuff, but I know that there's obviously a lot of PlayStation games and things. So yeah, well done, Team Asobi. You've put out something really incredible, something with a lot of heart as well. And I remember saying at the time when I initially finished the game that sometimes, like, okay, a developer can kind of put out a good game and call it a day, but sometimes you can really tell. And look, I don't know what the day-to-day life of Team Asobi was when working on this game. I'm sure there were some stressful days. I'm sure there were some deadlines and stuff that were difficult to get to. I'm sure some people were stressed at points. I'm not saying it was easy to make this game. I don't think any game's probably easy to make, even the sloppiest, worst things we've ever played. People still have deadlines and things where they need things to be in, and there's multiple moving parts and all that kind of thing. But sometimes you can just tell when a developer's actually loved something that they've made, and there's just love spread across this entire game. And I just think that's really incredible. So I just wanted to kind of give, I've been meaning to do this for about 2 weeks, but now that the newest five speed runs are all out, there's no more of the game at the moment. So, and it was cool every Thursday to kind of hey, who's the new bot going to be this week, and what's the level going to be, and how good are you going to do on the time trials, and where's all the little shortcuts, and hey, if you spin here and jump here, you can beat this thing and save 2 seconds. It was really, really cool week to week. So I just wanted to give a big shout out to that. So any thoughts on Team Asobi and Astrobot?
Yeah, a lot of times, especially in the last few years, we've seen that just because you have a big budget doesn't mean your game's going to be any good. And really, the double A space is where all the interesting things have happened. Have you had a chance to watch anybody stream Split Fiction yet?
Yeah, Access streamed that as well. That looked pretty good. So,
Yeah, it hit hard. It's less than 2 weeks out, and it's already broken 250 million concurrent on Steam. So, and for those people that don't know, the very short, non-spoilery plot is that you're actually a writer and you get recruited by a publishing firm to pitch some ideas for books that you haven't like completed yet. So you show up and there's like 10 people there. And the guy that's in charge is like, we don't do standard pitches. We're too high tech for that. So we've got these VR bubbles. Think like the pod in the Matrix, but without all the goo and the tubes. And so people just start getting into these bubbles, the platforms, and puts them in a VR bubble, and your character or the character that is tag teamed with you, one of those to freak out and start spazzing out, and then the people come up to try to calm her down, and she gets knocked into somebody else's bubble. So you've got two people with their memories, because it's a VR, but it's reading their mind. And so they're traveling through various worlds they've imagined. I don't want to say anything more past that because there is a plot to it. But it's very co-op-y. It's again, like what I've said before, it's like if you don't have to be told you're playing a Kojima game to know you're playing a Kojima game.
Oh yeah,
It
some
is
things
very
just have,
obvious.
noticeable DNA, don't they? Some things, yeah.
Yeah, this is very obvious that it came from the same studio that brought you It Takes Two and A Way Out. Like, it literally, you don't even have to be told if you've played or watched either of those games. Literally 10 seconds into the actual gameplay, you'd be just like that Leonardo DiCaprio meme where he's whistling and pointing at the TV.
Nice. Nice. So yeah, I guess that's two game recommendations, Astrobot with all of its free DLC and Split Fiction as well. So then moving on, that's my last thing I want to talk about for like what I've been doing and playing and stuff. So what was the last game I mentioned playing? Oh yeah, the Crash Bandicoot stuff, which I did do a rankings for. That podcast is, let's say, currently unavailable. I do still have it. It's not like lost or anything, but that's one of the episodes that's m messed up as well. So then moved on to Jack and Daxter. So I'm going to play Jack and Daxter 1, 2, 3, and I think I'm going to play Jack X as well. Of course, this is for another podcast project that I'm doing. So, as I mentioned a bunch of times over many years, and this goes back before I started Entertainment Talk, obviously on the PlayStation 2, Jack and Daxter, I don't know what year it came out. I've never actually looked that up, or I've never actually known that, but somewhere in the early 2000s with the PS2. Obviously, moving from the PS1 with Crash Bandicoot, they moved on to PS2 with Jack and Daxter, which was the next kind of step for Naughty Dog. So, a game that has always kind of eluded me, a game that has kind of annoyed me that I've never got into it, it's never clicked with me. I used to muck about in these games when I was a kid, because obviously I played games differently then, didn't take them as seriously, just kind of mucked about. And I'd always said about like the one game series or franchise out of all of them that's always bugged me that I've never got into them is Jak and Daxter, because obviously played all the Last of Us stuff, played all of the Uncharted games for Naughty Dog, played all the Crash Bandicoot games, at least the Naughty Dog Crash Bandicoot games. There's obviously a bunch of the other ones. But it always bugged me that this studio that I love, Naughty Dog, has put out all these other games that I've really loved. Crash 1, 2, 3, Team Racing, Uncharted 1, 2, 3, 4, Lost Legacy, and Last of Us 1 and 2. I never did actually play Jack X, but again, that was me not getting into the franchise. So, started this game a couple of weeks ago. I think I started it after, yeah, it must have been after the last podcast we did because I haven't mentioned playing it yet. Very long story short, I have platinum this game. So it was very interesting after 20 something years. I mean, this the whole story of me restarting this game and trying it again and again, and it was never because the game was bad. It was never because I had problems with it. Apart from that camera, the camera is the biggest out of all the boss fights in the game that you can have, which they're not that difficult, which I actually appreciated. The camera is your biggest enemy in Jak and Daxter. And I was realizing a few things when I was going through this game. First of all, when you start and you're in Sandover Village, because I don't remember everything I did in this game before I did this run of it and I played it properly and finished it. But when I was a kid,
Perfect.
oh, what was that?
Sorry, I was messing with something.
Okay. But yeah, when I was a kid, and there was always two levels which I kind of walked towards and went away from, which was the Misty Island and the Forbidden Village or whatever it's called. And I can't remember what age I was when I like first played this game. I'm specifically talking about Jak and Daxter 1, not 2 or 3. Those games I'd barely touched when I was younger. And I guess I wasn't scared to continue the game. I was scared of those two levels, though. Those were two sort of more spooky levels, if you want to call them that. And you're probably talking about when I was between the ages of about 5 to 10, something like that. I don't remember, but well over 20 years ago. And even from everything else in this game, even from just doing those two levels, and I still understood now being 30, going through those two levels, understanding why I was a bit more afraid of them. And those are the two more sort of, not horror particular levels, but more, there's like a spooky, more horror kind of atmosphere to it. They're not horror levels, but they're more spooky and kind of stand out over everything else. There was a couple of levels later on in the game that I've was like nervous to be in because of their layouts and how the levels presented themselves, but I wasn't like, nervous about them or whatever. But because I did like a long 15-minute video, which you can see on YouTube, which is basically me finishing the game and getting the platinum, because I lined it up to where you beat the last boss that gets you all the trophies and you get the platinum. Getting the platinum in this game is quite interesting because you can do it quite streamlined. Because you simply kind of go from level to level, pick up all the precursor orbs, pick up the scout flies, pick up the power cells, defeat the boss if there is one in the level, and then you're done. And then you can move on. I had to look up a few things. I want to give a shout out to, I don't know if the channel is still active now, but a channel called Ghost Type. Very short, sweet, to the point videos. There's some commentary in there as well, but I found that to be quite helpful. Really, really good videos from whoever that person is, so shout out to a Ghost Type on YouTube. But yeah, even just from like that main hut in Sandover Village, the amount of times I like rolled down that bridge over and over and over again, just restarting this game, and I'm like, oh, I'll try Jak and Daxter again. Oh, I'll try Jak and Daxter again, and just never really got that far with it. And I did not go into this game aiming for the platinum, but I realized as I was going through it how the game is laying itself out. And I was like, okay, if I look up a few guides for if I'm missing a few bits and pieces, but it is, you are on a path where you can do that and you can get everything in the game, and it's not terribly difficult. It's just a case of if you get lost a little bit or if you can't find certain stuff. Now, if you go in the game and you do a second run or a third run and you know where everything is, looks pretty easy from those standpoints, because those are a few of the videos I came across. But yeah, if someone had said to me even 3 months ago, 2 years ago, of like, hey, in March 2025, you're going to get the Jak and Daxter Platinum, I would be like, well, that's not something I'm trying to do or think I'm ever going to. Not something I. It's not like it's something I couldn't do because I never knew that that was going to be a thing, really. But even when I did like the first, like, was settling in and doing the first couple of levels, I'm like, okay, I know this game's got a platinum. Don't know if I'll go for that. I'm just gonna try and do just the base game. But the interesting thing, the way this game kind of teases you in a way of like, hey, here's all this stuff in this area that you are, and the draw distance on this game, now this is the PS5 version of the PS2 port, if that makes any sense. The draw distance of like looking in the distance to see these small little precursor orbs just in these corners, like on like the other side of the map, is really, really good. I didn't notice anything like popping in or out of the environment, because in certain games when you're in a bit of an open space and you walk towards stuff and things in the distance will start popping in properly. Didn't notice none of that at all. Everything was looked like where it should be. Obviously, the game was probably hiding certain stuff off screen that it didn't need to load, but because you can press like triangle and you can look through Jack's like goggle things or whatever, and you can proper that's when you want to have like a proper look around. But even if you're outside of that view, you can still see really, really far in the distance. So I was very impressed with that. And given how small these little precursor orbs are, it was I was very impressed with the game from that standpoint. But it was once I realized like again, it wasn't a doubt that I could get the platinum because I never knew if I was gonna. I was never in the wheelhouse of like, can I or can I not do it? Because that was just never a thing that was on my mind to do. So, yeah, maybe I'll do like a podcast reflection on this game because this weird journey I've gone on with this game has lasted like 20 years. And in terms of like ever revisiting this game, I personally don't want to touch this game ever again because I've had such a good run through with it this time and got the platinum, and that's just a nice of this 20-year long odd story of me playing this game as a kid and all that. It just puts a really nice bow on it. So, I have moved on to Jack 2. I'm not going to talk about that this week because I do want to save some time for other stuff. But yeah, it was just it was interesting to get something that I didn't doubt if I could get it because I didn't know if I wanted the thing or was gonna try to get it, but going from one end of the scale of like, hey, I can't quite, you know, the amount of times I was like, can't quite click with this game, it's just not quite, there's something off with it. Turns out a lot of that was maybe the camera that you fight with in this game and the camera controls. But once it just sort of clicked, the rest was not easy because the biggest problem you'll have in this game if you're doing the collect run or 100% is getting lost and or not knowing where stuff is. So yeah. Very, very interesting journey. Any thoughts on my Jack and Daxter journey?
Not specifically. I mean, I've been there before to where you just have an old game you forgot about, and then you're like, oh, I haven't played this in a while. I don't really have anything pressing. And then you start playing it, and then you reminded yourself of why you really liked it to begin with. As for the platinum, I'm not a trophy chaser, achievement hunter, whatever. So I don't really go that far into games, but
Yeah, and again, it wasn't a thing where I booted up the game and looked at the platinum because I know some for some people that are more platinum hunt heavy, they sort of check the trophies before they even sort of start the game just to see what they've got to do. And then as I was just collecting more stuff, getting a few more trophies, clearing the islands a bit more, and I was like, is there anything difficult, like actually difficult I've got to do for the platinum? Because it's not like a difficulty level. You don't have to finish the game on hard or anything like that. You don't have to really, apart from one little time trial thing, you don't have to really speed run anything. So it just dawned on me at like quarter of my way through the playthrough of like, if the rest of this is going to go like this, then it's achievable. But again, it wasn't something I looked for or wanted or thought about. It just kind of dawned on me quarter of the way through. So anyway, very interesting journey there with Jack and Daxter. And once I play more of Jack 2, because I've played it for about an hour today, but I'll save that conversation for later. So all right, with all that down and out of the way and everything else, let's move into a bit of a makeshift housekeeping section this week, but we can talk about some stuff in there. So we'll see you for some housekeeping in a minute. Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice.
Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show.
All right, so in terms of this week or whatever on Entertainment Talk, we're still doing the Yellow Jackets podcast. Those are still out. 307 I did do on Friday as well. That podcast went normally, it went fine, and on the podcast platform versions of that one and the site version, it's perfectly fine. There are two test episodes I put out. One was for The Last of Us. I wanted to know if that feed was working properly, because obviously the show's coming back in 3 weeks or so. It's really kind of admittedly snuck up on me. At one point it was like 6 weeks, now it's like four or three, so I just wanted to test that out today. Although from all the podcasts I did last week, from like the Ted Lasso thing and the Crash ranking list, and then I did a sort of what is my favorite and best game between Last of Us 2 and Crash Bandicoot 3, that podcast you can still find. I can't remember if that's specifically on that one or the Crash ranking levels, but just check those episodes, you'll find that one. Because I had the thought of like, okay, if I just, because I was getting towards the end of the podcast project thing with the Crash Bandicoot thing, because I was finishing Crash 4, so I did that and then did the basically Crash 3 versus Last of Us 2, which was an interesting one to kind of compare those games. So I did all those episodes. Then there was two film reviews I did. One of them is available in the normal podcast feed, which is We Live in Time. I gave that a must-see rating. The other one, called Companion, again, for reasons we don't understand, if you check the site version of, I think it's The Last of Us 2 versus Crash 3, the Companion review is in there. But if you play the Companion episode, for whatever reason, that plays one of the Crash episodes. Again, it's all a bit mixed up. We're aware of the situation. I'm messaging Castos. Unfortunately, they're not active at the weekend, so we couldn't get anything done about the episodes this weekend. They've also said, like, from what they've... obviously, they can look more in the back end of stuff. They've said that this problem is very strange, and I echoed those sentiments. So it is what it is at the moment. There's nothing I can do immediately about that. If I could, if someone said, hey, you can just go and do this, I would have done that thing already and sorted the episodes out. Other recent stuff, the Spider-Man review, that one's still there. So that's the Strong Must See review for Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man Season 1. That one's still good on both sides. When I mean both sides, I mean the playable episode on the website and the playable episode on podcast feeds. So that's still the same one. In terms of the Yellow Jackets Season 3 Episode 6, that's all good on podcast platforms. On the site version of that one, it plays the Ted Lasso episode for some reason, but I did put a link in there that explains what's going on. If you scroll down a little bit in the text, it says, hey, if this played this Ted Lasso episode, click here. There is a redirect. It's like a blank page thing, basically, that just has the playable episode. So if you get caught up on that one or whatever, that's that one there. So again, it's very annoying. There's nothing I can particularly do, because again, if I could have done something about it, I would have done whatever that thing is. But I'll keep updating on social media, mainly on Twitter and stuff, about what's going on. But as I said, if you go to play an episode and it plays a different one, it's not your fault, it's not anybody's fault, really. You'll just have to, unfortunately, catch up with that one later. So that is, unfortunately, what's going on at the moment on Entertainment Talk. Although, again, I say things weren't very busy between all of those episodes and this week. This week, I only had planned to do basically this podcast and Yellow Jackets anyway. So technically both of those episodes got done, because we're here doing this Gaming Talk now anyway. So that's what's going on with that. So yeah, check in, still check the site and all that kind of stuff for the episodes. But if it plays the wrong thing, then it plays the wrong thing. Unfortunately, I can't fix that right at this moment. But yeah, that's what's going on with housekeeping. Anyway, let's finish with that and move on to some news. We'll see you for that in a minute. Speaking of The Last of Us, very interesting. They can definitely file this more under rumor mill, which is what we're going to do. But there's some interesting connections to The Last of Us 2 here as well. And this is from a source called Daniel RPK, who's been known to be right about some stuff, wrong about other things. But I wouldn't call him, you know, a liar I would say that he gets information, he gets scoops, he reports them. But if he's wrong about something, it's not because, like, it's not because he woke up one day and decided to lie about something. It's because maybe something that someone told him has not quite turned out to be true. But I guess that's how the scooping industry works. Some things are true and some things are not. But I think there's some interesting validity to this. So rumours are circulating that Last of Us Part 3 is already in advanced production, with actors already being cast and some scenes being filmed. Okay, so here's why I think this could be true. If, for those of you who watched the Last of Us 2 documentary, which was called Grounded, and I'm not going to get into spoilers here, in around about 2016, because Last of Us 1 was 2013, Part 2 was 2020, in between those games, there was also, was it both Uncharted 4 and Lost Legacy? Because I think Uncharted 4 was 2016, and Lost Legacy, if I remember correctly, was about 2017. That was the Chloe and Nadine spin-off game, which I still really liked. So it wasn't just like, hey, in the last 7 years, all Naughty Dog did was Part 1 and Part 2. They did also do Uncharted 4, and they did Lost Legacy. Now, there's a point in The Last of Us 2's documentary where, because it sounds like, not necessarily immediately, but shortly after Part 1 came out, Neil Druckmann, I'm talking about, started brainstorming ideas for Part 2. Probably just, you know, sitting there in his office, brainstorming some stuff, noting things down, because that's how brainstorming works. And he came up with this little tidbit, this little idea. And if you remember from a while ago, probably about 2022, 2023 maybe, he did say, like, hey, I've got a little nugget of something I want to work off of, like a concept for Part 3. Now, other than sequels and new IP and ideas and stuff, that's probably how some stuff gets created. It's like, hey, there's an idea that just came to you one day. You want to kind of grasp on it. Figure out kind of from the concept, and then brainstorm and brainstorm and brainstorm, and eventually brought up the idea to be a full thing. Now, one of the things he did is, in between, because he wasn't co-president at the time of Naughty Dog, that was after Part 2 came out in 2020, he sat down with, obviously, I almost said Neil Baker, no, Ashley, Troy Baker and Ashley Johnson, of course, Joel and Ellie, and he filmed, if you remember, in 2017, there was the PSX trailer for Part 2, which was the actual original announcement trailer, and it was Ellie playing this guitar, and she says, I'm going to find and kill all of them. It was the initial announcement trailer. That was based off him kind of sitting in his office. He brainstormed this idea, and he's like, okay, I know we're very busy with these Uncharted games. I just want to get this one trailer filmed, and then maybe something will never come of it. Obviously, the people involved will be paid. He just wanted to kind of like get this nugget, get this thing filmed, then go back to Uncharted, and then go back to this Last of Us idea, and then worked on it from there, and obviously it ended up being Part 2. So when it says, like, some scenes have been filmed, I wonder, because when was the documentary last year? He said that, because he's been quoted saying before, like, hey, I have a concept of what Part 3 could look like. And in the documentary, he said, I think there's one more chapter maybe to this story. I do wonder if maybe he's got some of the actors involved and done the same thing again. Just this kind of like, this book of green screen, maybe just for like, how long would that take? Maybe one day or something, to kind of, or maybe not even a full day, maybe a few hours or something, of like, hey, I've got this little idea, and I could film like a minute's worth of trailer off it, just to kind of get a concept going and to get something started, which would make sense, because he has said before, he has like just a basic outline, a basic concept for what Part 3 could be. So, again, I'm not saying that that's true, because no one knows, apart from if it has been filmed, obviously, in secret or whatever. But given that this sounds similar to what did happen with Part 2, of just, I just want to get this little bit done, get this trailer filmed, and just see kind of what's warming up with that. Obviously, they were working on Uncharted as well at the time. Now, I remember, I think it was in the last podcast, and we talked about how busy Neil Druckmann is. Now, whether Part 3 is or is not in development, maybe nothing's been written down for Last of Us at all, although I doubt that. I would imagine at bare minimum, Neil has written something down in some notebook somewhere about Part 3, even if it's just a basic kind of, this could be the story. I'm gonna doubt that that's like not happened. That probably has at least happened. Like, he sat there and he's noted, because even in this interview we're going to talk about in a minute, between, or not an interview, between Neil Druckmann and Alex Garland, he does say, like, hey, I leave notebooks around, I jot stuff down, which I would expect somebody like that to do. You know, a thought just comes to you one day and you're directing a game or whatever, and you want to note stuff down. So if this sounds like what it sounds like to me, I think it's possible, because again, you're talking 5 years between part two and now, which is a long time. And again, I get it. In between now and then, he obviously released part two, created a first season with Craig Mazin based off the first game. Obviously, he's worked on the second season as well in between that time. And then in secret, they've been working on Intergalactic for 5 years. So to put any Last of Us 3 work on top of that, which is, this is what we kind of talked about last time, it's a very, very, very busy person. And with all three of those things, whether it's part three, whether it's season two, or Intergalactic, basically anything Neil does has got pressure on it, because, you know, Naughty Dog, and it's got a lot of eyes on it. And whether it is Intergalactic or Last of Us or Uncharted or anything that he puts out, not just him, obviously Naughty Dog as well, is going to have a lot of eyes and a lot of pressure. So I remember last time when we talked about, like, Neil kind of saying, oh no, don't bet on a Last of Us 3. I think that's just him telling people, like, can you just leave me alone and stop asking me about this game just for 5 minutes while I work on something else, while I work on season two, and then obviously start probably doing brainstorming for season three, and then, you know, no pressure, launching a brand new IP for PlayStation and Naughty Dog, which he's directing. No pressure, you know. So he's got a lot going on. In terms of, like, casting stuff, obviously there would possibly be new characters, so maybe secret auditions have been held, but who knows. Anyway, given how busy, we've talked about how Neil is with everything going on, do you think it's possible that these, like, secret things have been filmed, or actors have been cast for stuff? Where do you think that could potentially be at?
I would put it honestly at a lower priority, because you gotta remember, when he said don't bet on it being The Last of Us 3, that wasn't that long ago. That was actually 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So that is a fairly recent versus what he was saying in, like, 2022. And actors have gigs. They move on. They might not have time. I'm sure they did test footage. People always do test footage, just like the same way that Microsoft and Sony are always playing with hardware. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to build something new. Mm-hmm. They might, but they got to play with the hardware, see what it can do before they make that decision. So my guess is that it falls under that category of just, you know, seeing what we can do with what we got.
Yeah. I mean, again, if it's the case of he's got some stuff written down in a notebook and he's like, I just want to get this trailer done, which is what he did for part two, and, like, hey, bring in some of the people back, or bring in some new people, just to film, like, a 90-second or even 1 minute, or maybe even less than that, trailer, just to kind of get that pinned and then work on everything else. I mean, I don't know how many hours he works in a day or whatever, but doing a season two, then probably season three, then doing Intergalactic, trying to get that right, and then maybe working on a part three. There's a lot of stuff, and all three of those things are going to have a lot of eyes on them. Whether they're positive or negative eyes, they're going to have a lot of eyes on them anyway. So, speaking of Intergalactic, I want to move on to what is my last news story this week. I was going to talk about the Death Stranding trailer. I did have that in my notes, but I didn't get around to watching it because it's 10 minutes long. So, we'll talk about that at some point soon. So, Neil Druckmann sat down with Alex Garland. Now, I don't know if you knew that Sony does this. They do a creator-to-creator interview. So, not someone like a journalist sitting down with Neil Druckmann asking him questions about Last of Us or Naughty Dog. This is two people who've worked on a thing and they kind of compare and contrast different notes. And obviously the similarities between Alex and Neil is they're both directors of different things. He's directed some films and he's directed obviously two video games, technically three if you count Left Behind, but that was a DLC. So they were sitting down and talking about some stuff. I did watch the whole thing. I really, really loved what I saw. I'm not going to, like, recap the whole thing here because they talked about 28 Days Later, obviously from Alex, and Neil mentioned Civil War, which is a film I really, really like. Neil also was like, hey, I think they'll make a good game one day. So who knows, maybe Alex and Neil team up and Naughty Dog makes a Civil War game. I'd be up for that. I don't know how that works with a video game, but, you know, Neil's a video game director and I'm not. So whatever clicked in his brain in that moment, I'm sure that could be interesting. Anyway, he was... one other tidbit I want to mention before about the interview, or the... It was more just a conversation rather than an interview. Is Alex straight up turned around to Neil, sort of near the middle of the interview, and he said about how impressed he was with Last of Us, so the first one, and he goes... now, Neil didn't prompt him to say this. He did this of his own accord, and he turned around and he's like, Last of Us is better than 28 Days Later. Now, he's the guy who did 28 Days Later, and Neil is the one who did Last of Us. He's, like, very, like, assuredly and confidently, he, like, taps on the table and he's like, hey, you know that sort of, like, hey, listen to me, I've got something, like, I really want you to understand and hear this, that kind of mentality. And he's, like, basically saying, okay, that thing that you made that is kind of similar, you know, infected, apocalyptic world kind of thing, what you did is better than what I did. Now, some of you might be surprised. I've never actually seen any of the 28 days or weeks or whatever films. I need to go and do those. But I thought that was interesting. And the specific, he said, like, okay, do you want to know the reason why he kind of said, rather, while he was happy with what he did with 28 days, and obviously that is older than Last of Us, he said it was more, he said Last of Us was more sophisticated. Now, I can't speak to those, I can't speak to both of those things, because I don't know how good or bad 28 Days Later is, because I've not seen it. But that was an interesting kind of way for that conversation to go. So then Neil starts bringing up Intergalactic. He says, like, hey, we have a new game coming out, it's what he's working on at the moment. And here's just a few little bullet points of what he said. So, it's set 2,000 years in the future. An alternative universe where the timeline deviates from ours in the 1980s. So I think he means, okay, so from the 1980s, you go 2,000 years from then. So any progress that, like, the real world has made, I guess, from 1980s to 2025 wouldn't have happened, because he's basing this from that. So that's a curious, like, time period or whatever. It says a mysterious new religion forms around this time and starts to take hold. Naughty Dog spent years working on the timeline and how the religion changed throughout the years. Naughty Dog's previous games have always had an ally slash companion, so they wanted you to feel lost and alone in a mysterious universe this time. Then he says, I really wanted to make a game about faith and religion, also about, but also about being lonely. And it says, no one has heard from this planet for over 600 years. So I think he's referring to, you know, when Jade, you don't see her crash land on the planet. You see her sort of land on the planet and there's that big robot. She gets her lightsaber-esque sword out and she starts fighting this thing. So no one's heard from that planet in 600 years, which I guess is why Jade maybe goes there. And then Neil Druckmann specifically calls out Half-Life 2 and the Monkey Island games as some of his favourite examples of storytelling. Mentions the fact that Half-Life 2 has less hand-holding and trusts the player to put together the pieces themselves. I've not played either of those games, so I can't talk specifics there. And then it says, I really like this bit, actually. Neil jokes, said, with The Last of Us 2, we made certain creative decisions that got us a lot of hate. A lot of people love it, a lot of people hate it. The joke is, you know what, let's do something that people won't care about as much. Let's make a game about faith and religion. I thought that was really funny. And it says, we still have a ways to go. Yeah, he essentially said to Alex, like, okay, let's pivot slightly a little bit. Like, pin Last of Us, pin all these other things that we're doing. And let's try and come up with a new concept. And then him coming out and saying, like, hey, let's try and make a game about something that people don't care about, which is faith and religion. Now, obviously, in today's day and age, religion's a very, 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 very hot topic across the world, whatever side you fall on, whatever religions. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then once Neil had finished talking about everything he was talking about, Alex is like, right, you don't need to tell me anything else. I just want to go and just see what's up with this planet, discover what's going on, and kind of see what's up. So... yeah, there's a few new little tidbits on Intergalactic, the Heretic Prophet. So yeah, interesting ideas, some interesting stuff for him to kind of work off of there. So 2,000 years in the future, no one's heard from the planet in 600 years. Obviously, I assume in that meantime, this bounty hunter thing has been established, which is where we see Jade in the trailer. But I just thought his comment about, like, let's make a game about something that people won't care about as much. So we'll see how that goes. There was another bit in there as well where Neil was talking about, some of the choices in Last of Us 2. And I loved Alex's response. Now, I don't know. I mean, I don't know Neil Druckmann. I don't, know him personally or whatever. I only know from things I've read about him and him in interviews and things like that. I know a lot less about Alex and his thoughts on things. I did look him up, and there is a good chunk of films that he's done that I've seen, like Civil War and Annihilation, which I really like both of those. And when Neil turned around and was like, "Hey, a lot of people kind of hated what we did, the choices we did in Last of Us 2," and Alex was like, "Who gives a shit?" Not in the way of like, "Who cares about your story," but in the way of like, the more hateful stuff. The sense that I got from when the way Alex said that is like the more hateful stuff, you've got to kind of go who gives a shit and ignore it. Because there's a big difference between, okay, constructive criticism of like, okay, here's how this thing clearly could have been better, and then just, you can hate a game or a thing like that, but that doesn't necessarily give you, or doesn't really give you a reason to like hate that person necessarily. And from what I obviously saw from well, from what happened obviously with Laura with Last of Us 2 and what happened with Neil and stuff, that was that the hate that some of those people got from that game, that went beyond just, "Oh, I don't really like Last of Us 2 and here are the reasons why." These were kind of like, outright death threats and things like that. So that's, I think that's more on the side of like, you shouldn't care about those people. Not that they're easy to ignore, because they're not. Because obviously, if someone sends you death threat or something, it's hardly easy to ignore, is it? But like, I took that as kind of Alex saying, "Okay, you should kind of try to, who gives a shit in terms of that hate, and just keep doing what you love, and the people that love it will kind of continue to do so." So I thought that was an interesting way for Alex to kind of respond to that. So, yeah, Robert, what do you think of everything that was kind of said here? I don't know if you saw the, it's on Sony's YouTube channel. I don't know if you saw the actual conversation or what your thoughts are on Alex and his films. So, is your mic muted? He's
Yeah,
not.
I haven't seen many of his films. The problem that I have with what he says about I don't give a fuck about what, people that are critical say is two parts. One, because sadly, we've gotten to the point to where any criticism whatsoever is considered, harassment and needs to be squashed like a bug. I mean, hell, Ubisoft had a cadre of lawyers prepped and ready for mass suing anybody that was critical of AC Shadows when it launched. And number two, why do you think your games are not selling the fraction that they used to? Because you're making games that nobody cares about, and you don't care about making games for what they want. You want to make your self-insert game. You want to make your, this is how I see the world, and everybody must agree with me game, and they don't sell. That's why AAA games are crashing. That's why Assassin's Creed Shadows is bombing big time. And minor correction to a previous podcast I did, when I said that the guy, the CEO, was under the delusion that they could sell, get $1 billion of revenue from AC Shadows by the end of the fiscal quarter, I was wrong. It wasn't March 31st, 2026. It was March 31st this year. So he honestly thought between the 20th, when it launched, and at the end of the month, he could get $1 billion in sales, which, depending on the price point that you buy the game, That's anywhere between 8 and 10 million copies sold. And that ain't going to happen.
No, this ain't Call of Duty. Right, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. And they're lying right now. They said they've had engagement from 2 million players. The numbers don't back that up. The SteamDB peaked at like 43,000 on opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way that combined console, PS5 and Xbox had 20 times that on each platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
And notice how they use the word engagement. So they're counting the paid streamers who are, you know, shilling this game as people that are, you know, in the game itself.
Mm.
And nope.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we'll probably talk about Shadows very shortly. What do you think of some of the tidbits mentioned there about Intergalactic, like the set in the future and all that kind of thing?
Again, I'm going back to the fact that I have no problem with games touching on politics or religion. The problem that I've always had is that it almost always is, this is my opinion. This is the only opinion you should have.
Yeah.
And then they use that as a cudgel to beat you down for not having that opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I was trying to think, because it says here about Naughty Dog's previous games have had an ally companion. Right, so... Okay, Crash Bandicoot has Aku Aku when you get the boxes. Jak and Daxter has, well, Jak and Daxter. Uncharted has sometimes Sully, sometimes Nathan, sometimes Nadine, sometimes Chloe. And Last of Us has, well, Joel and Ellie, and Ellie and Dina, and Jesse's there sometimes. Yeah, and those are all their games. So yeah, that's kind of interesting. So I'm guessing there won't be any, because there's kind of a meme thing between, it's mainly with Uncharted and with Last of Us, the amount of times you boost somewhere up. So the player that you're controlling will, like, they'll put their knee down, or sorry, bend the knee or whatever, and go, hey, put your foot on my knee, I'll boost you up the thing, the cliff that's too big or whatever, and push the ladder down. It's kind of a classic Naughty Dog thing. So maybe that won't be in this game, or maybe you'll have... I'm sure there'll be some little Easter egg thing where, like, Jade's got some equipment where she can climb the wall, and it'll be cool if they put a little line in of, like, something about boosting. Because the amount of times, even in Uncharted, Nathan will go, hey, boost me up, or something like that. Or usually in Last of Us 1, it will be, obviously, Joel boosting Ellie up, because... she couldn't lift Joel, could she? Especially the 14-year-old version. And boost him up and stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. But yeah, the whole loneliness angle. I mean, it makes sense for, like, okay, if you don't have an ally with you, you're out in space and you're going to go to a planet that you haven't heard from in 600 years, you probably are, at least initially, going to be the only one there. So... we'll see what comes out from this game. Anyway, that's all the news I got for this week. How about you?
Oh, I got a ton of stuff. First up, have you ever been in a position where somebody you don't like is going after somebody else you don't like, and all you want to do is just grab a bucket of popcorn and watch them knock 7 bells out of each other?
Sure, sure, yeah.
Well, that's what we got going up right now. Former Activision Blizzard CEO... Bobby Kotick is suing Kotaku and their parent company for defamation of character on their gaming site, which, let's just pause a minute and marvel at the irony and audacity of that concept.
Yep.
So Kotick has filed a defamation lawsuit alleging deliberate misrepresentation by two of the media group's outlets, Kotaku and Gizmodo, citing coverage that referenced long-withdrawn allegations unrelated to the topic at hand. According to the legal complaint, Kotick contends that both Kotaku and Gizmodo published articles regarding his rumored involvement in a potential acquisition of TikTok, of all things. Kotick alleges that the outlets unnecessarily revived past accusations against him that had already been dismissed as part of their coverage. The lawsuit states that the reference claims stemmed from prior allegations into activism Blizzard and have conclusively disproven by numerous investigations, yet were still used in the article. Kotick argues that the inclusion served no journalistic purpose and was designed to cause, and I cannot believe I am saying this statement without laughing my ass off, caused reputational harm.
No, you did that to yourself.
Where is my soundbite right here? Here we go. What? Yeah, see, this mirrors what Kotaku did a while back with Mr. Beast, who was misquoted by Kotaku, leading to a backlash against him. Although I've not seen anything about Mr. Beast suing Kotaku. I don't think he, yeah, A, cares if he has time, or C, wants to waste the money, because he's like Scrooge McDuck rich almost, so he's got no reason to go after him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The lawsuit comes amid growing scrutiny of media practices across the gaming and tech sectors. This case highlights ongoing concerns regarding the responsibility of media outlets when reporting on individuals involved in legal disputes, particularly after the resolution of such matters, says Kotick's lawyer. Outside of me laughing my ass off at this,
mm-hmm.
I hate to say it, but on a very, very tiny level, I am on Kotick's side only because journalism, media, especially Kotaku, and sites like that are absolute gutter rotting trash. They have no value in the gaming industry. They have no value in society as a whole. And the fact that they're still even active is amazing.
Yeah, I agree with you on that side, yeah. It's funny you mention about, like, the state of some of these sites, because there's a video I watched from John Campia's YouTube channel, and he was talking about how, very, very long story short, how the leader of this guy who runs this company that owns certain like news outlets, I'm not going to name them because A, I can't remember all of them, and B, there's too many of them. Basically, the parent company, this guy who runs the parent company of this thing that owns all these like news outlet sites, and he was kind of breaking down how people were getting paid, essentially, if you do the math correctly, $5 an hour for like these really long articles. And how this guy who was running this company was getting sued because he wasn't treating people properly, and he was running people into the ground because saying like, "Hey, you have to do this by this point," and was essentially again paying them $5 an hour. And John went and counted on two of the sites that this guy owned, and because one of the other things this guy is doing with these sites is what was the phrase that John used? Essentially trying to run so many sort of like top 10 this, news that, opinion this, this and that, and this and that. And what you essentially tried to do is make as many random articles from different people as possible, again by paying them essentially $5 an hour, and use that to sort of spread your content far across the internet in hopes of picking up more clicks. So basically shoving as much stuff out there as possible in hope of getting more and more click, 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 click. And he said that there was one site that it was either in a day or in an hour, had posted like 100, no, it was within one day, had posted like 190 articles. Now, for those of you that used to think that I did, maybe before I had a job or whatever, used to do a lot of podcasts, and I can still do a lot of podcasts. Imagine if I did 190 a day. But essentially, the reach.
I thought that's what you were doing.
Yeah, true. But the reach there was like, okay, let's just shove as much random content out there as possible and work people to death in hopes of getting more clicks and more money. So it's not like a quality control or anything like that. So this kind of reminds me of, again, not in a similar vein, but about people running things into the ground. But yeah, in terms of Bobby and his like defamation of character and stuff, he's done that to himself. He doesn't need somebody to write defamation type articles about him because he's said those things for himself and also been in interviews where he's not sounded like the smartest guy. I remember there was like a, I don't think it was Wall Street Journal. There was some like more New York Journal kind of channel I watched. Not the channel, it was a video I came across. When Microsoft was trying to get Activision, and he was talking about Call of Duty, and I can't remember what Bobby Kotick said because, well, it wasn't memorable and that kind of thing. And that gave me a glimpse into like, this guy owns Activision Blizzard that puts out COD and all these other, you know, juggernaut games. And he just didn't sound like that somebody that should be running a video game company. I really do wonder how this, like, I guess it's Sly Promotions or something like that, how these people actually end up in these high paid, like, if you're the CEO, regardless of how the company's kind of doing, because you have COD to back you up every year, how you kind of accidentally become the CEO of Activision Blizzard, that's just, it's always wild to me. So yeah, I mean, I guess this is him going for the smaller person in a way, but we'll see what comes of this, I suppose. So,
yeah, and the website that was like the worst at that with clickbaity article was always BuzzFeed, and I am so glad that BuzzFeed is gone. And I was actually talking to somebody when they shut that down, and they're like, "Well, they had some good articles," and I said, "Okay, which article did you like more? Man drinks his own pee, or lesbian touches penis for the first time?" And those are both actual video articles they did. I am not making that up.
Hmm. All right. There you go. Cool. Anything else to say here? Or should we move on to the next one?
We can move on.
Cool.
And fortunately, everything is all good news from here on out. So as you know, Monster Hunter Wilds blew up when it launched, had huge success, despite the badly optimized PC version. It still had, you know, several millions in sales. I think I saw the one where it was like 4 million in the first week.
Nice.
Anyway, Monster Hunter producer Ryozo Sugimoto would become Capcom's chief product officer in charge of the development division. The corporation announced the other day. Ryozo has worked at Capcom since 1996. He is son of Capcom founder and CEO Kenzo Sugimoto and younger brother to Capcom president and CEO Haruhito Sugimoto. Ryozo has been a longtime champion of the Monster Hunter series, working on it all the way back as a senior producer for the 2007 game Monster Hunter Freedom 2. So big ups on launching a game that everybody loved, and congrats on the promotion.
Yeah, turns out it's not an easy thing to do these days. So,
yep.
Yeah, I watched Access stream. That as well. Actually, the two streams on that. One was like more of a co-op one. I wasn't particularly interested in what was happening in the game, but that's not because of the game's fault. It's just not kind of my thing, but it looked good. It looked better than Atomfall. So there's that. Of course, they were playing on, I can't remember if they said a pro or a normal PS5. Not that there's actually much difference, but they were obviously playing on PlayStation. So if there was any PC issues, it wasn't on that stream. But it looked good for what it was trying to do. I'll give it that. So, but sometimes it's okay to, you know, look at something, recognize it's really good, but just know that you'll probably never play it because it's just not really for you. So that's okay. Cool. Anything else on that one?
Nope. It's just one of those things that, you know, you reward success and you get more success. It's not that hard of a formula.
Sorry, did it say there what they got promoted from and to? I didn't catch that, if that was in there.
To gaming creator, didn't say what his previous title was.
Okay. Cool. All right, what else you got?
Well, Japanese gaming icon Masahiro Sakurai, who created the Smash Brothers and Kirby franchises, made headlines for his sharp, decisive insights on the state of gaming industry, specifically Western trends currently dragging it down. Sakurai was recently honored with Japan's prestigious ARC Encouragement Prize from the Agency of Cultural Affairs, recognizing his outstanding contributions to the gaming industry throughout his long and storied career. Following the achievement, Sakurai participated in an interview with Intax, where he addressed the growing trend of what he considers plaguing the gaming world, the prioritization of Western tastes over authentic homegrown creativity. Sakurai stressed that Japanese developers should focus on making games with domestic appeal rather than chasing what they believe Western audiences want. He stated plainly, quote, "I think Japanese people should be pursuing the things that Japanese people like." This is simply, it's a very simple but very powerful statement. And we see that a lot in games. I forget if we ever talked about it on a podcast, but you've seen so many articles to where localizers translating it from Japan to English will change words and statements and meanings, intentionally mistranslating it to put it into their preferred Western beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
We see that all the time. A lot of people have been fired over it. And I agree with him. Like, if I was making a game from where I live, I wouldn't take opinions from, like, New Zealand, you know, saying, oh, you live here, therefore this, this, and this. I would consider that supremely arrogant. As I consider Americans saying to other countries, oh, you should do this, this, and this to games about your history and culture. I also find that supremely arrogant, which I would not do. And we're seeing that more and more. And we're seeing that with games that are flopping hard. And that's one of the reasons why they're flopping hard, is that they've taken something that could be awesome, forcing it into this box, and then are shocked when nobody wants it.
Yeah, I've seen certain comments around, like, some stuff in Assassin's Creed that's mainly with Shadows that's, like, not translated well or whatever. So I mostly kind of agree with what you sort of said. Obviously, feedback is important and interesting. For example, if obviously a good example that goes in line with what you've just said is, like, if a Japanese person's making a Japanese game and I say, no, you should put this, that, and the other into it, but I'm not aware of anything, like, from Japanese culture or how that runs, or, like, I'm aware of some cultural stuff around the world, but, you know, not everything. I can't know everything about everyone. So I kind of get what you mean in terms of that. I would say, though, for countries I'm kind of more familiar with, someone's opinion from a different country could be more valid in certain situations, but, like, I don't know. Again, it kind of, I think that sort of thing comes down to research and what you end up knowing and not knowing about a certain country or a certain culture. But so that's where, like, even kind of from day one with this whole Assassin's Creed thing, where it was like, and I can't even remember what it was specifically they got wrong, but it was to do with the samurai stuff, wasn't it? And, like, how one of the characters shouldn't have been doing something or whatever it was. And
yeah, they were trashing. Well, they were swinging the sword around and trashed the temple, and that is a
that was
big,
one of the
big,
things, yeah.
big. No.
Yeah. Because I remember on a podcast a few months after that, and like someone from Ubisoft opened their mouth and they said something along the lines of like, oh, we're sort of well researched in this thing. And I remember I kind of said like, sometimes it's just better to just not say anything. Sometimes it's just better to just like, it's like, I know it's a different example, but it's like at the moment with Jim Ratcliffe, who's the co-owner of Man United. And there was an interview a few weeks ago with him that was like 45 minutes long. And before I knew the interview had come out, I saw loads of quotes from it. And they're all just him saying stupid stuff. And I scrolled past the interview on YouTube. And now look, I'm supposed to keep up with the news and all that kind of stuff for Man United. I just didn't want to watch it because I just didn't want to watch a video of the guy talking. Because it's got to that point with, let's say someone like him, and there's other people in similar positions like him, where it's like, I want you to just stop talking, just stop. And right, it could have been some embargo thing. It could have been there could have been a specific reason for it, or just like some journalist reached out and said, "Can we have an update or whatever?" But sometimes I want you to do more actions than words, and that's the point I'm at with him. But on Ubisoft's case, it's like, yeah, your actions, like your louds are speaking very, sorry, your words are speaking very loudly, like when you open your mouth and say something stupid, but your actions are also really loud at the moment as well, and no, nobody's liking any action or word that you say. So those are kind of, I guess, two different examples. But because with him, it's when it's like, oh, I want to make the club better, I want to do this and do that, and it's like, you've made the club worse since you've come in. So him sitting there saying like, yeah, I'm gonna make it better, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that, it's like, sometimes you just should stop talking. And it's like when another kind of slightly different example, you remember when the Sony CEO, I think this was after Craven came out, and they said, oh no, fans are wrong, our films are really good. And it's like, you've just deliberately, well, not maybe not deliberately, you've just said something really stupid. And you just, even if that's what you think, you should try and, I don't know, work with a PR person and spin your words into something that sounds better. Because we kind of forget sometimes, some of these people are supposed to be PR trained and are supposed to be like, okay, if you get this awkward or this difficult question, or you're playing for a club and something bad's happened, and you get asked a straight-faced question in an interview, you should try and spin it into, not in the way that a politician does, where they just don't answer the question, but in a way of like, try to give it, so that things don't look awkward and terrible in the moment and you embarrass yourself, even though you're not the one that caused the problem. Just a bit of PR training of like, okay, if this happened and an interviewer asks you this after a game, even if the match you've played has got nothing to do with it, they might still ask you, you should say this or that. There's clearly a few people in this industry that could use a better PR training with certain things. So
Yeah,
that's my
probably the
that,
best
that's my thoughts
example.
on that. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, probably the best example I have is when the first Kingdom Come Deliverance game came out. Some of those talking heads were giving it crap because there was no black or Asian people. Well, the problem with that is that it was set in 1403 Eastern Europe. The only city that I can have a point of reference to is Prague, which is 5,000 kilometers away from Cairo and 13,000 kilometers away from Tokyo. How many people from that area do you honestly expect to see, not only in a day, forget a day, in your lifetime? That just ain't happening. So, historical reality, oh, you're a terrible person, and this ist and this fo because you don't have a meta game. To where 99.999% of the people would have never seen one in their entire lifetime.
Yeah. But no, just at the end of the day, like, see, that's the thing. For some of these people, they don't realize what they're saying is stupid. So if I was to say to them, tell me what you're gonna say, and I go, right, that thing sounds stupid, like the whole our fans are wrong for thinking our films are bad. It's like they just need to be briefed on like almost every single thing that they say. But then if you're, again, I don't want to call these people stupid because that's not fair. But if you're thinking something like that because you believe that for some odd reason, you might not go into an interview thinking, okay, that's a bad thing to say, I should say it differently. because you don't think that that thing is bad to say in the first place, which is where the problem starts. So, yeah. Anyway, there we go on that one. What else do we want to talk about today?
Well, we got a little callback to your earlier conversation about Adam Fall. Rebellion CEO Jason Kingsley did an interview with PC Gamer talking about their upcoming game. During the conversation, Kingsley was asked how the studio has managed to avoid all the layoffs that seem to be hitting all the other game studios following the COVID boom. He replied, quote, "It would be incredibly egotistical to just say it was entirely due to our incredible skill at running a company. I think there's always a bit of luck involved. I think us controlling our budgets extremely carefully has been our best success. We have substantial budgets in terms of millions and millions of pounds, but we don't have hundreds of millions of pounds. We try to make it so that we can make a really good game, and it has to have a very decent chance of making a profit, and that's really what it comes down to. Now, in the last 5 years, they've released Sniper Elite 5, Sniper Elite Resistance, Evil Genius 2 World Domination, and Zombie Army 4, Dead War. So, making small, good games that sell well is what he says is their key to not having to lay off half the studio after a game bombs.
Yeah. Sounds like a good approach. I mean, again, I might not have liked the look of the game that this person's just put out, but I mean, how many podcasts have I said about, like, okay, if you look at the films industry at the moment, the amount of films that are costing 200 to 300, sometimes 300 plus million, and it's getting outrageous, it's getting completely out of hand. There was an example that, I don't think I mentioned this on the podcast, that Mickey 17 that just came out, which cost around, like, 280, 300 million or so. That's including marketing, which is still part of your budget. And it made, like, 17 million or something. And then they announced last week that, I think they said on the 25th of March or something, it's just going to be on VOD. And you look at that and you just think, like, something's gone, like, badly wrong there. But the fact of, like, okay, you didn't really market this. You put a lot of money into your marketing budget, 100 million, but you didn't market it that great. And then you just give up on it after, like, 2 weeks. 2 weeks is nothing for a film. I think most films need probably a couple of months, really, to have a really good theatrical run. I mean, if you look at something like Inside Out 2, which ended up being the highest grossing animated film of all time, granted, it crawled its way over and past Lion King, but that's because it also stayed in the cinema. It wasn't sort of like, oh, it's been out for 4 weeks, it's hit a billion or whatever, let's just stick it on Disney Plus. They kept it there, and it was making small bits and small bits of money. It ended up being, you know, 20 million here, 30 million here, whatever, and then it eventually crawled over. It went decently past Lion King, actually, but that's because I kept it in cinemas. And sometimes it's just like, I don't know what's in all these contracts and all this kind of stuff, but it feels like the film industry particularly is getting that very, very, very wrong at the moment. I mean, I don't think I want to know how much, like, Snow White cost, for example. It was probably more than 200 million, but I don't want to know really if it cost more than 300, because sometimes you just look at a film like that and it's like, how has this cost 300 million? Where did it go? I'm not seeing it on the screen. Is it in the script? Did you pay the actors a lot of money or something? Or, like, what's going on with that? And then there's, like, you know, CG budgets and, you know, the CG dwarves and stuff and whatever else. So, yeah, hearing this guy saying, like, hey, we need to be a bit more careful with the budget, which is a simple standard thing to say, but you'd be surprised how many people aren't really thinking that way. Yeah, they've kept it well at the moment, so that's pretty good.
And the sad thing with Mickey 17 is that, from what I've heard from... one second.
Oh. Is he coughing? What did he mute himself for?
Yeah, coughing, sorry.
Oh, I guessed correctly. Yeah.
Yeah, for what I've heard from the people that are content creators that I follow that do reviews... It's not a bad movie. It's not an awesome movie, but it's not a bad movie. But it did 40 million domestic, 110 worldwide. But if you just look at the numbers for what's come out and what it's done, I mean, there was a movie that I never heard of called Novocaine.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. It's not out over here yet.
Yeah, opened at 8 million.
That's a shame.
In the US.
That's a shame. Yeah. Yeah, it's
15 total.
Jack Quaid. Yeah, he was in obviously The Boys, he was in Companion and some other stuff as well. So, oh, Scream 6 because I tend to forget about that film, but yeah, he was in, is he either 5 or 6? I can't remember. Those two films sort of blend together for me. Yeah, that's out in a couple of weeks over here. I've got my eye on that one. I was kind of curious about Mickey 17 as well, and then this week I looked at the cinema listings and it was like two showings. So,
yeah,
that's that done. That's the end.
Did you see the incident at the Captain America 4 viewing over here in the States?
What incident? No.
One of the theaters was doing a showing, and the roof collapsed.
Oh, jeez.
But fortunately, nobody was hurt because the theater only had two people in the theater. Two.
Okay.
One, two.
Hmm. Yeah. How long has that been out for now? About 4 weeks?
About a month.
Yeah, so most people that would have seen it probably have, unless there's people that are behind on watching that film. So, yeah. All right, let's move on to your next story. What have you got?
The last thing that I got is that Niantic, which was developer of the game Pokemon Go, has agreed to sell its gaming division to something called Scopely for $3.5 billion. This transaction encompasses popular titles as Pokemon Go, Pikmin Bloom, Monster Hunter Now, along with the companion apps like Campfire and Wayfarer. Obviously, you remember when Pokemon Go launched in 2016.
Oh, yeah.
Became a global sensation.
Mm-hmm.
Scopely is known for titles like Monopoly Go, which I've seen. I don't know if you've seen the commercial with Chris Pratt and Jason Momoa doing Monopoly stuff.
Not sure if I have. Yeah.
Yeah. But the Pokemon Go transitions under Scopely at its ownership. The gaming community is keenly observing how it's going to develop the game and future versions of the game.
Nice. Yeah, wasn't on my bingo card really to hear anything about Pokemon Go, but yeah, that was absolutely massive. I remember when, let's say when my niece lived closer than what she does now, and when she used to come around some weekends, we would, not for like the whole day or something, but for a couple of hours, we would go for a walk and we would play that a little bit. It was always weird to kind of be like, because you had to use obviously your camera, didn't you, to kind of look for them and do that sort of thing. And you,
if you wanted the AR mode, yeah. Otherwise,
yeah,
you didn't need to.
Yeah, we did it that way anyway. And like now and again, you'd sort of accidentally point your phone camera at like someone's house, and they might be they would have the right to think that, okay, why is this person pointing their phone at my house? Or something. I mean, we never got in like any trouble or anything like that, but it was a bit odd. But yeah, it was kind of fun. So yeah, it's a good chunk of change there. So well done to them for doing that. I remember when people thought that whole idea was going to kind of kick on a bit more. I remember there was like a Walking Dead thing that, I don't know if it actually did come out, but there was something similar with that. But yeah, I think things like that should be explored a bit more. I know there's a big gamble on like the kind of VR, AR space. There's also this thing that Sony's doing. No one in the comments was sure like what it is or how it works, but you go to this like soundstage thing that Sony's made, and they mainly were doing it for Last of Us, but they were going to do it for some other games as well. And you would have this kind of like gun accessory, and you would have, I assume, a headset on or something, and it would give you this 360 degree like immersive experience. One of the things they had was this like subway tunnel thing where there's like a train that had crashed and there was like clickers and stuff coming out of it, and Ellie would not like walk up to you, but she would walk past you or something, and then say like, "We've got to go this way." There's a video of it on one of Sony's YouTube channels. And everyone was like, okay, this idea was kind of intriguing and interesting, but it didn't really explain sort of like how exactly it would work or whatever. But it looked like a somewhat interesting idea. The only problem with doing things like that is you do have to put a lot of money into it, or for like, you know, the props and the stages and all that sort of thing. So, but Sony's got a lot of IP. So there's a lot of thing they, there's a lot of, IP they could do that for. You could probably do like a God of War thing as well if you wanted to. Probably something for Horizon. We've got like a bow and arrow accessory. So see what they come up with. Don't know if, have you seen anything on that at all? Like this?
No, I have not.
This interactive thing that Sony's trying to do. So I didn't see any date on it as to like when you could go and visit it or something like that. So we'll see. But no, well done on getting the $3 billion for that. It's a good chunk of change. So, did you ever play Pokemon Go that much?
I played it a little bit, but I always have a thing to where I don't play games that feel like second jobs.
Yeah, yeah. Like you got to keep up with stuff and that sort of thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool. All right. You said that's all you got for this week?
Yep.
All right, so we've won some emails, some feedback. If you would, of course, like to write into the show, because the email still works as well. Matthew at entertainment.talk.org, social media, eTalkUK, and his information in your show notes. Harrison writes in and says, you keep forgetting to talk about Astrobot, so I'll ask you a question about the game. Who do you think Astrobot 4 could be, and what other bots would you prefer to see in the game? I think I mentioned before that with one of the newer ideas they've got in Astrobot, is the like special levels. I won't spoil which ones there are, but there's four or five of them, and you basically take Astrobot into like a proper themed world from some of Sony's IP, and like you gain the powers of that character for a level, and then you play through a level themed through that. Now I don't know obviously how difficult that was for them to make or how much brainstorming is involved in all that. I wonder if you could do that as the whole game. There's a few different ways you could maybe do that, but as people have pointed out with Astrobot, because you've got what, like, I think it's like 323 bots or something, there's a lot of IP you could use to work with for that, and I think there's some games that could fit well into, because you'd still have the Astrobot game, you just use those controls and those functions in, like, within certain worlds and that. I wonder if you could do that, but as the whole game. I don't know what you would do for kind of, because in the VR thing, it's like, okay, you're in the VR world, you're collecting the normal bots. Then in Playroom, it's you collect the peripherals, like controllers, memory cards, consoles, that sort of thing. And then in Astrobot, it's you collect the characters. I don't know how you would translate that to, because I don't think you could do it again of like, oh, here's the same characters you picked up, but you pick them up this time and then you go into their worlds. So I don't know what you would do for that. Unless it's a surprise as to, because, okay, if you did Astrobot 4 and you did, like, okay, you collect the characters, but this time the characters that you collect are the ones that you go into the worlds for, you still don't know which ones you're going to pick up, but we now know what certain bots look like, certain characters look like as Astrobot characters. So I guess you could do that in a similar way. But, yeah, if you had a whole game where you, let's say you have like five worlds again or something, and you have the different characters, because that would almost change like the gameplay in all of them. I don't know. So they do still do a good job with like in particularly in the VR game and in some of the other ones of like the actual challenge levels. So like you have to destroy these enemies in a certain amount. It's not a time trial in the way of like, here's the start, here's the end, get there by a certain time. It's sort of like you have to use these, like the shurikens or something, to destroy these enemies. You get a certain amount of points, and you've got to get a certain amount of points to get a certain amount of stars. So you could mix that in a bit more with, because that wasn't in Astrobot as much. That was more a VR player, not VR playroom, the rescue mission. That was more in that. But we'll see. Maybe their next game will just be a new IP or something. But in terms of like the Sony IP Astrobot is very, very hot right now. So, granted, we probably won't see another Astrobot game for another 3 to 5 years, because that's just how things are now. So, we'll see. We also don't completely know if they're done with the DLC, because when they put out these new set of five, they didn't say, like, hey, here's the last set of five. And I feel like they would if that was the, like, when they go to do their last set of five levels or 10 levels or whatever it's going to be, I feel like they will say, these are the last ones that we have. So I have to wait and see. What do you think they could do for future games?
Hard telling, but, you know, given how well they worked on a, and how well their platforming worked, something else with the platform IP would be great.
Mm. Yeah. So we shall see. And what other bots would I prefer to see? I don't know, because it's gotten to a point where, okay, there's 300-something bots, and most of the main big PlayStation stuff is in there. I don't know. Apart from, yeah, admittedly some more Last of Us bots, because there's, I'm not going to spoil which ones there are, but there's fewer than I thought there were going to be. Of that, and someone put it out, because I was talking to somebody on Reddit about, like, how you can use, like, let's say when Wolverine comes out, you put a Wolverine bot in there, and then when Intergalactic comes out, you can put Jade in there. And I remember when I also said, like, when the Pro came out, and when the earbuds or something came out, they put those peripherals in Astro's playroom. So, like, they updated them. I wonder if we're going to get this continuous thing, like, let's say when we get the PlayStation 6, or when we get the next PlayStation 5 thing, they'll put the newer peripherals in Playroom, and then any new characters that come out for any new games, it doesn't have to be a PlayStation game, it could be a third-party game. Obviously, the game would have to be on PlayStation, but a third-party game. You can use that as promotion for those, which they've done that recently. So I wonder with, like, because you could only really do it with sort of either new characters in sequel games or new IP. So, like, if there's any new characters in Death Stranding 2 or something, you can add those in. Then when Intergalactic or Wolverine comes out, you put those characters in the game or something. Then if we get, like, Spider-Man 3, and if there's new characters in that, you could put those in there. You could just do that continuously. I don't know how many resources that would take away, though, from Team Asobi, because I don't think they're that big of a team, and they're going to be working on new games. So, yeah. Do you think they could do something like that?
It's always possible.
Yeah, yeah. So, we'll see. And then lastly, Kaylee says, hey, guys, this time it's first time short time. Discovered you around Christmas. I'll throw a few questions at you. What is the outright worst game you've played? Also, do you think the next Xbox and PS6 could be here in 2027 with an announcement next year? I saw a little video on IGN's channel randomly on IGN. It was one of their Daily Fix episodes. I mean, someone like IGN puts out so much content that even for people following IGN, I doubt that you even see everything. And they were talking about something to do with Sony and the PS6. I can't remember what it exactly was. Here's my thing with the PS6, and I've kind of mentioned this a little bit before, but I can do it in a more expanded way. You know, when you look at that list of 17 that we had, if you remember, some of them were they were all live service games. Some of them haven't been announced but could be in development, and they make sense. And ones that have either been cancelled or released and not worked, or released and worked. And there was one game in there from the list of 17 that had been successful, which is Helldivers 2. Now, if you make the argument that, like, okay, because Sony slipped a little bit, right? They're not the sort of, you know, the sort of 2018 to 2022 or 3, that era of Sony, where it was like Spider-Man 1 and 2, God of War Ragnarok, Last of Us 2, Ghost of Tsushima, what else have they had? Like Returnal, Ratchet and Clank. Those were all pretty well received, like the single player story narrative focused games that Sony is known for. And then you pivoted to obviously Concord, things like that. Tried to do Last of Us Online, that didn't work. What's going on with Bungie? And it sort of switched around like that. Releasing a PlayStation 6 will not solve that problem. Because, okay, it gives you an opportunity to put better games out, because I assume the PlayStation 6 will be better than the PlayStation 5. But that doesn't guarantee that the games that you're going to put out on the system are going to be better, because that won't change the. Releasing a new system will not change the IP that you're using or the games that you've got in development. It will make those games hopefully better because the system's better. Although there's games from previous generation consoles that are better than games on some of the newer consoles, so this doesn't always stand up that way. But Sony needs to very immediately, in a very emergency sense, pivot the hell away from live service games. Let Helldivers 2 stay there and thrive and do what it's doing. Obviously, you're probably going to put out Marathon from Destiny. Sorry, not from Destiny, from Bungie. Probably got to put that out, and then whatever other live service stuff you've got in development, probably put that out and just see how it goes. But Sony could do with their next, and maybe probably Death Stranding 2 is probably the next one. They could really do with their next big. And granted, they did just put out Astrobot a few months ago, but time for the next big one, and I don't think the next live service game is going to fill that. So putting out a PlayStation 6, it just doesn't solve that problem. Okay, let's say we're in mid next year and we get the announcement of a PS6 for holiday next year or something. That doesn't solve the problem of what games you've got in development. So that's not going to be something that is. I mean, okay, the games you announce for the launch of the PS6 could be exciting, whatever those are going to be. But it won't make those games. It won't make the situation better. So, what do you think of how that situation could go?
Well, I think next year we could possibly see a step up on the Xbox brand, or maybe just jump to the next version, just because Sony came out with their PS5 Pro, nobody really cared. They could just do a new version easily enough. The biggest problem is that until you get developers that can optimize the games better, having better hardware doesn't mean anything. All you have to do is look at Monster Hunter Rise and how badly it was optimized on the PC. It's still sitting at a 51% favorability on Steam because of that. I think that the bigger problem is that Sony doesn't have any games that are synonymous with the Sony brand coming out this year. I mean, I'm not, trying to wave Microsoft's flag here, because these are all going to be multi-platform games. But next month, which is really close, you got South of Midnight.
Looking good.
You got Forza 5 coming to PS5, but that's a Sony game. You got Expedition 33 coming out. That looks really interesting. I don't think I'll play it because it's not the combat style that I like. But then you got the Shinobi games, Borderlands 4, which I don't know if anybody actually cares about. But you look at all the big name games coming out that are associated with Microsoft and Xbox because of the developer ownership. Sony just doesn't have that kind of name recognition with games that they used to have, because they got nothing coming out.
They need like a Wolverine now, sort of. I agree with
And I don't
you
know if I
if that's
don't
what you
even know
mean in
that a
that
game will come
sense.
out. Yeah, I don't even know if that game will come out next year because of all the kerfuffle around it.
What was the kerfuffle around it? I don't remember.
The lead story director leaving halfway through it.
Oh yeah, didn't they go over to some, was it an Xbox team they went to? I can't remember.
They went to an Xbox team.
No, I remember that. Yeah, now you've reminded me of that. But because like from Sony's list, we don't know who's ready next, because we don't know what some of them are even doing as well. That's what I meant when I was like, when we talked about their state of play, whenever that was, and I was like, why are you going back to Days Gone? Okay, some people might have liked it. I can recognize that. I thought it was decent, but like, you kind of need your next big hit at the moment. I don't think that's going to be. I mean, even for Until Dawn, I get it. Okay, the film's coming out. You probably wanted to do something with that. Even though the film, again, still has not really much relation to the game because different cast, the plot is different. You have this live another day kind of function in there, which is just not what happens in Until Dawn. That just doesn't happen in that game. Heck, I remember even seeing some conversation around the Until Dawn remake, and some people think the PS4 version looks better, and some people couldn't tell which is the newest and which one was the older one. That's a problem when you come out with a remaster, is when someone can't tell which is the old one, which is the new one, because they're not even sure which one looks better. But things like Until Dawn and Days Gone, I don't think you needed, because they were both like backwards compatible. You could still play those games on your PS5. But again, you're putting resources into them. I know there's a lot of rumors heating up about like what might be happening with God of War, so that could be interesting. It would be good if we got like a, because we got like a mini roadmap from Microsoft, right, with their newest was it Dev Direct that we had, and you pointed out some of those games. I think PlayStation could do with doing the same thing, maybe. So yeah, we'll see. What was the other question that you asked here? What was the outright worst game you've played? Let's list some contenders. There is, now I never finished it, but I did play Bubsy 3D. That's known as like one of the worst games ever. I would definitely put Resident Evil 5 in there. I don't know why I finished that game. I almost wish I could go back to my old self and be like, listen, kid, just, not that I was a kid when I played the game, but like, look, kid, just turn the game off and do something else. Because you might think that you're going to feel somewhat good when you finish the game, but about 5 to 10 years later, you're going to wonder why you did. That makes me curious as to, you know, they've gone through like remaking 2, 3, and 4, Capcom. And they've done a very good job with them. They're not my games. I'm very disconnected from Resident Evil right now. But I'm very curious, like, you step in to do a remake of Resident Evil 5, you've got a lot of work to do there to improve that game. That's on the list. Callisto Protocol's on the list, definitely. I still cannot believe how broken the final boss is, because if you run out of ammo in that final level, you cannot beat that boss, and you have to restart. Because, you know, with most normal games, if it's like, hey, I've got to run around the arena a bit, and oops, I ran out of ammo, but hey, some more ammo respawned, I can pick that up, reload my gun or whatever, and finish the boss fight. You cannot do that in Callisto Protocol. I wonder if that ever got patched. But, and that wasn't that game's only problem. It had like a weird, the level designers and the combat designers did not talk to each other, clearly, because those two things do not gel well together. What else is there? I'll think about that a little bit more while you, what were some of the games, worst games you've ever played?
It's hard telling because I played so many games over the years, and so many could qualify for a bit worse in terms of just like function and being broken, just not fun, really obtuse with the controls. It's like there's actually games that I took for rental when we were going on vacation because I knew I'd have a lot of downtime. And it was so obscure on how to actually play the game that a couple that I rented, I had to call the Nintendo 800 helpline to get past like the first 2 minutes.
Yep, that's not good. But is there any titles at like the top of your mind of like ones that stick out for this particular thing?
Nothing you would have ever heard of. I vaguely-ish
remember
Soul Fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I vaguely-ish remember Soul Fighter, which was just a standard walk down the corridor and beat up the bad guys kind of a game. I forget why I played that game, but it was terrible.
Some games you do look back on and you're like, why did I go through that kind of thing?
Some NES games that were ports of arcade games for like really bad.
Yeah. There's some others that fit more on my disappointed list, like Modern Warfare 3, the newer Modern Warfare 3. Again, that's not a game that, like, well, apart from the issues, but, like, it's a game that works relatively decently and all that kind of thing. Like, there's no real sort of outright problems, but there's so many reasons that game shouldn't have even, like, it should have happened, but much later, much later. It still really disappoints me there. You know, the No Russian storyline, like the very iconic Call of Duty one. What they did with that in this, because I still remember when I finished Modern Warfare 2, the newer one, and they teased No Russia at the end. I was like, oh my god, they're bringing him back after all this time. We hadn't seen those characters since like 2011 or something. So that was a brilliant setup and way to do that. And then they just completely botched it. And I just sat there with a straight face and just watched it happen. Watched them just bottle this storyline. So, but that's more on like, okay, I don't even know if disappointed because I was never excited for that game because it just came out at the wrong time. But I would probably, in terms of like technically worst and like most just bad and annoying, I would probably say Bubsy 3D. Because again, I got my issues with Callisto Protocol. The game works okay. And it's well, say it's playable again. You have to restart the last level if you run out of ammo. I guess you just have to restart it over and over again until you finish it. But it's not as technically bad as like Bubsy 3D. Whereas Resident Evil 5 is one of those more annoying. It's like the way you've set this game out and the way the game works. It's not like what is flawed. It's more just annoying and flawed rather than like technically poor. I mean, yeah, there's some bad AI and things like that, but you can play it and you can get through it if you want to, for whatever reason. Whereas Bubsy's like, the music is annoying, this camera is atrocious, the platforming's terrible, the like field of view or depth of view, the thing I talked about earlier is really bad. The actual design of the platforming levels is like really terrible as well. Yeah, so. And it's a combination. I remember it's a combination. Like you got this really just not great character. You got this terrible looping, annoying music, and you keep falling off platforms. So while you're getting annoyed at falling off platforms, you got this terrible camera and this just music that just. I'm sure you can turn it off or whatever, but just this music that's just repeating itself. Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. Sorry, not Bubsy. Is it Bubsy 3D? The PlayStation 1 version. I know there's a Bubsy game that came out later on. It was a 2D one, but the Bubsy game from PS1. So do you remember much of that game? It's pretty
No, I
infamous.
wasn't on that platform at that time.
Okay, it's pretty infamous for being one of like the worst PlayStation 1 games. So all right, that's what we've got for you for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. You can of course find things that we do on entertainmenttalk.org, podcast platforms, entertainment talk for TV, games, films, main eye podcasts. This week is probably going to be this and then Yellow Jackets, and that might be that way for a little bit until, because I don't actually, other than some film reviews maybe and things like that, the thing I did last week of doing like the two film reviews and the Last of Us thing and the Crash Bandicoot thing and all that was like a bunch of podcasts in one go. So yeah, it's going to be this and Yellow Jackets for now. And then hey, sooner or later in about 3 weeks, I need to do some Last of Us stuff. There's the season 2 spoiler preview that I'm gonna do, and then our actual season 2 preview, and there's another podcast we might do for that, and then the season will actually start and we'll start covering that. So that'll be a sooner or later as well, so we'll start covering that. But if you'd like to support the stuff that we do, of course you can listen to more things. I've already told you where you can do that, and you can use word of mouth social media. If someone mentioned something, someone podcast, sorry, if someone mentioned something we podcasted on, please tell them about said podcast. There's Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, and free podcast a few options. Look for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news, of course, Geek Town Radio on Tuesdays and geektown.co.uk for all your TV and your film news. Lots going on over there at the moment as well. We're on Twitch at eTalk UK, but much more regular on YouTube. Again, if you want to see that Jack and Daxter video, that's on YouTube, as well as COD clips and other bits and pieces as well. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.